This is Oklahoma Perspective. The Human Rights Watch has finished its report on Tulsa law enforcement. The report was commissioned after the fatal officer-involved shooting of Terrence Crutcher. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked with John Raefling with Human Rights Watch and Tiffany Crutcher, Terrence's twin sister.
Talk a little bit about what your findings were, and obviously we can't go into a great deal of detail, but did you see some of those disparities, and were they, do you think, driven by race?
The disparities are undeniable. We found disparities in poverty and all of the sort of negative outcomes around poverty. We saw unemployment in the Black community considerably higher than in the white community. We found life expectancy substantial differences, you know, all the things that have been are being talked about in Tulsa, the lack of access to healthy foods, all these things contribute to an ongoing cycle of poverty. And one of the other negative outcomes of poverty, and poverty very much concentrated along racial lines, is this aggressive and at times abusive policing. And that policing often contributes to poverty. One of the sort of striking findings was just how, with every arrest or even ticket or citation, the individual arrested or cited ends up getting debt from the courts. Huge amounts. And this is a problem that's across the country. This is an issue across the country, but very striking in Oklahoma and specifically in Tulsa. Poor people can't pay. Failure to pay means a warrant, which means exposure to further arrest, which allows police to stop, arrest, search, go into people's pockets, so they're more likely to find that bag of marijuana on a poor person, and poverty and race track very closely in Tulsa and throughout the country. So they're more likely to be subject to new arrest, to be brought back into custody, and to get more debt piled on them. This is one example. More arrests in the Black community means more people with criminal records that make it impossible for them to work in the formal economy, which pushes people then, well, what can I do? I have to feed the kids. I have to pay the rent. And so it pushes people into doing negative things and doing hustling to get by, which then may expose them to more arrest and criminal conviction. So there's this cycle of poverty and then the policing response. Why are we not addressing these problems at the heart of the problem, dealing with poverty, dealing with health, dealing with mental health, dealing with drug addiction, rather than try to arrest our way out of these problems, rather than add more police to make more arrests? Can we invest in these solutions that actually elevate people and elevate communities?
Which would be a win-win, right? For the community at large, for our economy, for you know, these folks that we're talking about. And since you started writing this report, Oklahoma was already number one, not in the country, in the world, for incarceration of women. As you were writing this report, we overtook Louisiana, are now number one in the incarceration of men in the world. I saw a statistic not too long ago that roughly one out of five prisoners in the entire world are prisoners in United States prisons. We're nowhere near 20% of the population of the world, but we have 20% of the prisoners. What, Tiffany, I'll turn to you. What's the solution here? Where do we even start? Is it by just even having this conversation? Or do you see that there's real concrete things that could be happening now that aren't happening?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. We have to first acknowledge that we have an issue, because you have a certain group of people in this country who are big into law and order. And so if you commit a crime, you do the time, and they don't, as John stated, really delve into the root causes of what's really going on. And we have to really reflect back years because black and brown people in this country, and especially African Americans, we've endured every era of oppression. You know, when the Constitution was written, it wasn't written for black people to be free. We were deemed three-fifths of humans. And so we have to talk about this narrative of racial difference and why black people are perceived as less than. And so we've been through the era of slavery, 400 years of slavery, just this past August, through the eras of Jim Crow and lynching, and now mass incarceration and police brutality. Black people, we've been at the top of the list for all of those eras of oppression. So it started with policies that were written to keep marginalized people down and suppressed. And so we do have to start by first acknowledging truth, that we have a history of racial terror and racial bias. And then we have to go from there and start changing policies. Those are the solutions. I was recently appointed, or earlier this year, appointed to the Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform Board of Directors. And this past session, we did pass the retroactivity bill 780, and hopefully this coming November we'll launch a huge commutation program, hopefully to get some people out. But we failed on bail reform. We failed on a lot of things that should have been passed, because if you look at the polling, if you look at the campaigns that a lot of the legislators ran on, it was on reform. And then, man, we failed big time.
Why? We failed. Why do you think time. That was?
I'm going to be honest.
Please do.
Because what happens, we have a lot of people who are in these high positions who never really get proximate to the people who are impacted the most by these laws. And so there's a lot of people and leaders and representatives and senators trying to preserve relationships. And I do know that there's several people that profit off of the prison system that are making the laws. I know that for a fact. And those are people who need to be called out. And so why would they vote for criminal justice reform? You know, why would the bails bondsmen want criminal justice reform? Follow the money. Follow the money, and that'll give you your answer.
Well, and interestingly, when I've talked with anybody from, you know, the Republican Party or the right side of the political spectrum about criminal justice reform, they see it as a financial issue. Well, our, you know, prisons are overcrowded, and we can't afford to build any more prisons, and we can't keep, you know, enough correctional guards hired, and the DOC is bleeding money, and da-da-da. And so they'll sign on to some criminal justice reform measures if they think it's going to be more efficient financially for the state or for the local government. And I'm not saying that's everybody, but that is the gist of what I get from that end of the spectrum. And then from other people, I hear this is about justice. This is about people getting help and not, getting warehoused. So I do think criminal justice reform is going to happen, but it seems like it's just taken a long time to do it. Let's turn back to you for a second, John. You stressed, and I think at the beginning of your report, which is called, by the way, Get on the Ground, Policing Poverty and Racial Inequality in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But there's a subtitle, a case study of U.S. law enforcement. And I think that's a point that you'd like to stress, that this is Tulsa. It's based in Tulsa. It happened in Tulsa, the incident that sparked this whole report. But you're looking at some wider issues here.
True. Tulsa has its own unique politics, its own unique culture, its own unique style of policing, its own unique history and history of racial violence and racial relations that impact policing here in Tulsa. But it's also in many ways representative in all of those things of what is going on in the rest of the country. I live in Los Angeles. I see the same things happening in somewhat different ways, but the same things happening in Los Angeles that I've seen here in Tulsa. I talk to people around the country about what policing looks like in their local jurisdictions. And there's similarities. Obviously, there's unique differences to every location and the people involved. But the basic trends, the basic systemic problems exist there. Crime is related to poverty. Crime is related to the fact that we aren't educating our children. We're not taking care of people who have mental health conditions. We're not, making sure that people are employed and have opportunities to work. And the response to crime throughout the country has been, we're going to arrest our way through this. We're going to arrest people. We're going to criminalize people. And that has been focused on Black people in America, focused on people of color in general. That's happening in Tulsa, that's happening across the country. My hope with this report and this deep look into Tulsa is that it will have people across the country seeing their own cities and their own police departments reflected in what we're showing in Tulsa, and that they will enhance the conversations that they're having around how to fix things.
Just in the, when did you start? You started not long after September of 2016.
I started in July of 2017.
So 2 years you spent on this.
A little better than 2 years.
Solid years.
Right.
Have you seen any change? Have you seen any progress over the course of that 2 years?
Yes and no. What I've seen that's incredibly encouraging, and Dr. Crutcher, but also many other people in Tulsa have led this, is that there has been a community response, and that predates the killing of Terrence Crutcher. Right, there was community organizing around police reform before that, but it's really become very strong in the past couple of years. And that has forced the issue. That's meant that we have to talk about it here. There are elected officials who've been responsive. I give Mayor Bynum a great deal of credit for saying, this matters to me. He commissioned the Equality Indicators report. The fact that he said this is a priority to me, police reform, but also equality in general. So in that sense, yes, that's in a way an example to the rest of the country. Like, we need to address it. There's great community engagement on it, and there's some response from elected officials. The problem, or the challenge, is will that result in meaningful reform? And so there's a section in the report that looks at some of the past history of reform efforts in Tulsa and looks at some of the recent, particularly the Commission on Community Policing, the recent proposal around the Office of the Independent Monitor. And while finding there are some very positive things in the recommendations, overall it's falling short. And there needs to be, for example, on the question of oversight, the original recommendations talked about advisory boards that had no actual power. Well, we've been down that road before. Even the Office of the Independent Monitor proposal lacked power, lacked subpoena power or some guarantee of access to all documents and records, lacked investigatory authority, lack the power to impose discipline. So where are we going with the reform? Is there going to be meaningful reform? Or is it going to be, a few things that look good but don't make real significant changes?
Tiffany, you've been to some of these meetings on equality indicators. You clearly are working to try to change the momentum. Do you feel like since Terrence's death, there's been any progress? Or do you feel like you're spinning your wheels a little bit? Or has this sort of coalesced feelings
for folks? I will say that I'm up and down on that. I am very grateful for the community activists and all the advocates and people who are on ground pushing for systemic change on a daily basis. We've done a lot, and we faced a lot of opposition to just get to this point where we're finally at the table with the city leadership and the police department talking about these issues. And so just when I think that we're taking a small step in the right direction, then bam, something happens or comes out to show us that we're back at square one. For
Can
example,
you give me an example? Yeah, please.
For example, just in the last week, we saw District 5 City Councilor Cass Fowler come out and make a statement stating that, you know, we're against the Office of the Independent Monitor. There's only a small group of loud individuals, and I'm paraphrasing, who want this, and that the community should take responsibility for their actions, and we need to, you know, uplift the TPD. And he said it was a bunch of liberals. And I thought that city government was nonpartisan. And that disturbed me, because what you're simply saying is that people who are victims of police brutality and racially biased policing are responsible for that. And then to even impart politics or left or right, red or blue, Republican or Democrat in this process, when we're simply talking about equality, is unacceptable. And his statements need to be condemned by Councilman Phil Lakin, the chair, and by everyone else who believes in fairness and equality. Because for him to come out and say those things after we've been through three very important conversations around this equality report shows me that he's just been sitting up there, and I don't know who else, just checking in the box, going through the process, going through the motions. And I know that Oklahoma and Tulsa in particular has a history of just checking the box and putting together task forces and advisory boards, and we never get anything done. We fall short every single time, and we're well-intentioned. And when it's time to implement, then there's a new wave of elected officials, and then they start all over, and it's a vicious cycle. And so I stated, I think it was May 17th or 18th when Betty Shelby was acquitted that night, that I would not rest until I transformed and reformed the Tulsa Police Department, because I saw throughout the duration of the trial so many inconsistencies, so many policy violations. And we haven't stopped since. And so that's one example when I feel like we get knocked backwards. And even with this OIM, we stated that we wanted an independent monitor that was going to have power to actually investigate use of force incidents. And then we get this watered down version that has no power, as John stated. And so why spend money? I'm conservative as well. Why spend money on something that's not going to do what it's supposed to do? And we talk a lot about collaboration and partnerships between police and the community and bridging that gap. But what I see is that they really don't want it.
Tiffany Crutcher and John Raefling with Human Rights Watch. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.